Often on Hug Nation, I try to start with a belief buffet dish, some kind of lesson that I've been formulating. And then sometimes I just ramble. And today we're going to ramble. So welcome. I'm Halcyon, and this is Hug Nation. Today I want to talk about Wisdom 2.0 and my experiences there. Now, Wisdom 2.0, this is, I think, my fourth year going. I was told there'd be no math. And it is a conference where mindfulness and technology kind of come together. So there's people there from big tech companies, and there's people there that are meditation coaches and life coaches, and people that are trying to make programs and bring them into corporate world, people that are on personal paths of growth and discovery, as well as people who are trying to integrate kind of the good work into corporate worlds. And I think it's super important, super exciting. And amazing people go there. Someone mentioned that it was like Burning Man without the dust and drugs, because there's one, they attract a lot of burners. Two, they commission and curate a bunch of Burning Man cool art around the place. But it's really because of the interactions and the way that people kind of greet one another. And that, unlike many conferences where you're handing out business cards and making contacts, there are people there that are, trying to drum up business. But for the most part, people are really interested in meeting one another, sharing what they're doing, learning what you're doing. And so it's a really similar to Burning Man in that if someone comes up to you, you can assume that their intention is good and their heart is open, and you're going to be better off for knowing them. And that's, man, when you really go into interactions and you go into social situations with that perspective, it's amazing. Now, I'm feeling a little bit of hypocrisy as I share that, because one of the things that I struggled with a lot this weekend was my own shyness and my own insecurities flaring up and my own kind of struggles with talking to people. Now, anybody that talked to me, I loved it. I met a bunch of people that stopped me and reconnected with people that I had met in the past. But even though I knew that anybody, like, sitting down at a table would welcome a stranger coming up and saying hello, I didn't do it. And so I had some moments where I was kind of beating myself up. My first couple years I went professionally and was on my company's dime when I went, and now I'm going on my own dime. And so there was a little bit of like, come on, you paid for this, you got a room, you bought a flight, like, you're not getting your money's worth. But eventually I had to kind of forgive myself and allow myself to have whatever experience that I was ready to have. I mean, I guess when you're surrounded by people who are talking about mindfulness and going inward, it almost amplifies the absurdity when you kind of get in your head about stuff. But nonetheless, I was in my head quite a bit. And maybe I'll just jump right into this thought I have, which is that, so there's all these incredible teachers there and all these incredible talks, and most of them are live streamed or archived. So you can see the talks that most of these talks, if I mention a teacher, you can see them on the Wisdom 2.0 site. It may not be now, but very soon they'll have them up. And I once again was excited to see Byron Katie, who is a woman who has profoundly impacted me with the work that she does. And you can go to thework.com or see her videos on YouTube. And last year I stood up and asked a question, and that was super fun. But this year I went to see her talk, and she described the work again. And one of the things that you do in the work is you write a judge your neighbor worksheet, and it's a process of you figure out beliefs that you have, and then you kind of do inquiry on your beliefs. Any thought that you have that is causing you suffering, you do inquiry on it and break it down and figure out, how true is the thought, and who are you with this thought, and who would you be without this thought? And as she was talking, I was reflecting on some of the nervousness and the anxiety that I was having at this conference, especially considering, I would imagine that there are some people that hear me say that, they're like, what? You shy? You get anxious? And absolutely. And I realized as I was kind of pondering this and thinking about, oh, maybe this is something that I should do the work on. What are these thoughts or beliefs that make me insecure and nervous? And then I started thinking, you know what? Specifically, I'm really nervous about talking to women. I'm really nervous about speaking with attractive women, especially. And I started noticing, like, when I walk through the halls, because this conference is filled with smart, you know, mindful seekers, yogis, spiritual, just like incredible people. And there just seems to be like a high percentage of beautiful women, and which that happened to be kind of on a path that probably was somebody that I would like to meet. And I found myself, like, I would see a pretty woman and I would kind of like give a half smile and then like look away. And I think I really need to do the work on what are the thoughts that is making me, you know, avoid these interactions. You know, I think, I mean, as I briefly think about it, I think part of it is that I there's so much that I read about now and hear about now of, you know, women dealing with, you know, catcalls and how much unwanted attention attractive women, any women, receive. And so the idea of, if I see someone that's attractive and I want to talk to them because I find them attractive, well, then I am in that category of someone that is, you know, giving them that attention in that way that potentially is, you know, unwanted. They're not, you know, this isn't a pickup bar. They're not, they didn't ask to be hit on, or, and so I don't want to be that person. But then again, then I don't meet these people. So that was something that, you know, as I was going to the Byron Katie talk on the last day, I was like, I guess I still got to do work. Of course, we always have to do work. But what was luckily for me on the last day, when I was feeling like, okay, I've really not maximized my time here. I've really not used my time very well. I've not met that many people. The last like 6 hours of my trip was like, bing, 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 including on the way to the airport and on the plane. And so I was like, okay, all right. I guess the universe spanked me and then gave me a little sugar cube. Like, okay, here's your reward. Here's some people. They're awesome to meet. Other things that were awesome about the conference, one of the speakers that impressed me the most, which was not what I was expecting at all, was Jewel, the singer Jewel. And they had hyped up that, oh, Jewel's going to be there and she's going to perform and she's going to, and I was just like, that seems like a little too celebrity focused for this conference. And, you know, I'd rather hear some incredible meditator or some spiritual guru than someone who just happens to be a famous singer. And this kind of actually ties into another awareness that I had recently when I was watching the Grammys, and maybe I'll get in time to talk about that. But so I actually missed Jewel's performance. It was, the main area was full, and then the secondary area was like, I didn't really want to watch her on TV, was, you know, big screen and listen. So I missed the concert, which I heard was unbelievable. But I went to her talk the next day, an interview with Soren, the guy who runs the conference. And I got to tell you, Jewel is amazing. She has gone through an incredible spiritual journey in her life, and she articulates it beautifully. Like, she is an awesome teacher. If I never knew that she was a singer and I just sat down to listen to the way that she talked about going through trauma and lessons, and I would have been like, she's awesome. So thankfully, because she has a celebrity, she actually has some weight and momentum to the good that she can do out in the world, which she is so driven to do. God bless her. She was amazing. A couple highlights from things that she said that I was like, oh. She talked about I was like, oh my gosh, like these are the things that I think about and talk about so much. She talked about how much effort and significance she put into the process of stripping down and stripping away all of her masks and all of her false identities and kind of get rid of all the armor that you build up to try to protect yourself. She said, armor drowns you at the end of the day. Love that. She also said something, she said something like, I don't know actually how she worded it, but she said, if my music is the greatest art that I produce, then I'm an asshole. And then she said, I want my life to be my greatest art. I love that. Me too, that's what I say. Except you said it better and you're awesome. And so she was filled with all these tools. I don't have her URL here right now. I'm sure you could search for her site, but she has a new site that she's building and growing that is all about growth and giving tools to people. So yay, Jewel! Another highlight for me was seeing Chip Connelly, who was a hospitality super or entrepreneur in the world, sold all his Jeux de Vie hotels, and then most recently was the hospitality king. I don't know what the title was, but he was brought in to build up Airbnb. And he's written a bunch of really incredible books, and I've met him at some Burning Man events. He's on the board of Burning Man and Esalen. And he gave this talk about the new elders and this place that many people in the audience were in, where, and I find myself rapidly being in that situation of being out of touch with the technology patterns and uses of the emerging generations. And which is so weird, because for the longest time I considered myself, you know, like a digital explorer and pushing the cutting edge of internet technologies, and now I'm like, snap what? Huh? And so he did this incredible talk about how he came into this tech company at, you know, 21 years older than the CEO, and had to go into this relationship of being an advisor while being an intern. And how they set up these processes of two-way learning that became exceptionally beneficial to everyone, and how he was able to, you know, his experience was able to help the company as he learned from people, and the pattern recognition that he had from his wisdom of his years, how it was became priceless for this emerging company. And he's an incredible speaker. I was so impressed, and as I get a little older, I'm easing into my elder role with a little bit more comfort. So thank you, Chip. Another highlight for me was there was a talk by Dan Siegel, and he had all sorts of wonderful things to say. I didn't know this person before this, but he's done a lot. But he told a story about being in Namibia, an African country, I believe, that he said was the tribes that still live there are among the most similar to the earliest tribes of man. And in this country, it's ravaged by disease and famine and drought, and it's just like a very hard life. But the Namibians are exceptionally happy people. And so he told the story about asking the translator to ask these crowd of people that were around the fire, you know, why are you so happy? And the translator's like, you want me to ask them why they're happy? And he's like, yeah. And after they, you know, talked back and forth, and the translator said, they're happy because they know that they belong. And then the people asked him, back where you're from in America, do you feel like you belong? And as he told the story, I was just like, gung, like, oh my gosh, like how, and I mean, I think the whole audience was just like, ah, there's a gasp of like, wow, that really, that puts a bright light on really the fatal flaw of our culture. And it became a theme that a lot of speakers talked about, that sense of belonging and trying to, you know, help people find that and how do you cultivate that. And that, you know, in our culture, we are built on a system that inherent in its success, inherent in capitalism, inherent in our growth economy, is the need for everyone to feel incomplete and to need things. And so all of those things, like sense of not belonging, sense of not enoughness, are intentionally amplified by our external environments and our media. And so even though we've got all the stuff, we lack the basic thing that gives happiness. I just saw a whale spout. I can still see it. It's still out of the water. Oh, my goodness. So let's all try to help one another feel like we belong. At the end of the conference, distracting. It's amazing. Did it again. All right. Two of them. I'm sure this is fascinating viewing. If it wasn't so far away, I would turn the camera, but there's no way. It's like a teeny tiny spout to me. And if I put the camera on it, it would be. But I assure you, let's pretend this is a radio. There's a beautiful plume of white. Oh, I just saw his tail flip up. I apologize. Or maybe you can feel my joy and we can mutually celebrate the miracle of nature. So at the end of the conference, they invite people to come up and do like a 1-minute share of how you're feeling or things that you learned. And most people go up and go, oh my gosh, this is incredible. I love you people. And one thing that I'd been thinking about a lot and talking about with people was how my first year that I went, I kind of, in the breakout session, I remember having these conversations feeling like, it feels like there's a lot of talk about our personal mindfulness and meditation practices and less about how do we then be of service in the world. Because it kind of felt like, hey, if this doesn't lead us to a life of service, then I'm not sure if we're really getting it. And then this year, because of the political climate and because of, I think, just the climate, even before the election, just the awareness of, hey, we need to have more cultures and populations represented in the types of talks. The speakers were incredibly diverse. And there was a huge focus on activism and bringing in the piece of your practice into the world. And it was so strong. Like, there was so much about the things we can do and examples of people doing things in the world that I started to feel like this pressure. And I was talking to them like, oh man, it's a lot. Like it, and then I saw this talk by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's this, you know, mindfulness, incredible mindfulness teacher. He's got this love and peace about him. He just kind of feels like everybody's grandpa. And he talked about this process of being of service and being bringing your love to the world, but not in like an overt activist way, but in a, through meditation, through mindfulness, you feel the oneness, and that becomes the starting point for how you act in the world. And it becomes a, I'll butcher how he said it, but the way I felt when he said it was like, oh, okay, this is more in line with the way I feel and live, is that, yeah, I'm of service in the world because it is my nature. I feel love towards people, so I want to be kind to them, which relieved that sense of, guilt. And one of the things that kind of poked at my sense of guilt was there was a lot of reminders about, or for me, reminders of my privilege. And one thing that kept coming up, because there was a bunch of things about race that talks about race, and the one thing that came up a number of times was like, look, we can't pretend that race, that slavery and the Native American genocide are not a part of our history. We can't pretend that, like, just because they're in the past, that there isn't this massive lingering echo. And to pretend that it's not is a massive disservice, and actually is forces us to avoid, or doesn't allow us to grow and heal. And sometimes that led to the conversation that is happening a lot lately of hey, as scary and as horrific as the political landscape seems, it's also shining a bright light on all these things. It's diagnosing all these illnesses. It's allowing us to, see the shit that we can now do the work on. I talked to a woman who was saying that we were talking about this struggle of being, wanting to be of service, wanting to be an ally, wanting to be supportive of underrepresented communities and populations, and then also having the experience of kind of getting spanked by people and kind of being made to feel bad, or we did a show about this a little bit back about like the frustration and the dissonance that the left has because we fight amongst ourselves, like, oh, you're not doing enough, even though we're trying to progressively swim in the right direction, but maybe our angles aren't quite in alignment, or the passion in which we're paddling is not in sync. And then rather than saying, hey, can I gently get you to come a little bit farther? There tends to be like occasionally, and it feels hard to hear, of like, that kind of attack of you not doing enough. Or an example being, after the Women's March, all the criticism about, these, white women, are you going to show up for the next Black Lives Matters parade? Which, if asked in one way, I think could have been like, oh yeah, you're right, we're all connected, we need to be sisters. But when said, when phrased in another way, it's kind of, it's repelling. And so we were talking about this phenomenon of like the challenge therein. And she said that her son was in high school and was dealing with this. He was really struggling because in his, he's a white male, and as in Berkeley, and as this dialogue is getting more and more heated, he's getting kind of attacked, or feeling attacked, or even though he wants to be an ally, he's starting to feel like I give up. And so she was asking me for advice, and I was like, I don't know. But one thing that I think about, or I try to think about, is that if the burden of being privileged is that occasionally I need to endure the frustrations of someone who has been living with actual oppression, that's not really a burden at all. And maybe that is a small price to pay. And in a landscape where I can't do that much, one thing I can do is be patient and understanding and listen, even if someone is expressing their feelings or their perspective in a way that is, aggressive. And in the past, I have been critical of that. I'm like, hey, if you just kind of ease up on the tone, it's so much easier to hear. And people have argued and said to me, like, look, don't tone shame people. And we've got every right to be angry and frustrated. To which I say, intellectually, I know that. I also emotionally know what it feels like. It takes a lot more work to stay facing and listening, when my instinct is to be defensive or to sink away. But so that came up a number of times as well, which is, again, yay, another opportunity to do work. Did I mention that this show is going to be a little bit just meandering reflections of Wisdom 2.0? Oh, well, if I didn't say that, that is what's going on. Rather than a polished belief buffet lesson for this broadcast, I'm just sharing my Wisdom 2.0 experiences. That might be the end of my notes. I left wondering if I would return, not because it isn't awesome, but because one of the things that I get out of it is hearing people live that I probably should have read their books, and I probably could have got all this information if I would just have a little discipline and read a little bit more. But being there in person makes it so much easier to feel the energy and get the lessons. So it's really more a matter of can I justify the expense? Is there something else, other travel or trip that I should do? Or choose instead, but there's massive value that I get, even if all I do is sit and listen to the talks. But to really, I think, maximize and get the most out of this experience is to really understand that the community of people around here has so much to offer. It's similar, to a Burning Man experience where everybody there has a gift to share, and there's no people up on the stage versus those in the audience. Although in this situation, there is people on the stage and people in the audience, but many people in the audience very well could be on stage. And a lot of them actually wish they were on stage, which is a fun quirk amongst the waking up crowd, the desire to teach and to help and to share our stories, which is a beautiful instinct as long as it is wed with a little bit of humility. Oh, was I speaking to myself right there? You betcha. I saw someone earlier ask a question about, did I have makeup on? And the answer is, I wish. The darkness under my eye is the remnants of the chalazion that I had in my eye. Now it's been 7 weeks or something like that, but I had it removed a month ago and still having the healing. Now, to be fair, I lost my way. And when I was at the conference, I put on makeup on this thing. Because from a distance, it looks like that I've got maybe eyeliner on. But up close, it looks like I've got like a cut underneath my eye. In fact, I bought some makeup the night before, like just in case. Because I actually put on makeup 2 weeks early or 3 weeks earlier. And I thought that might have led to it getting infected. So I was like, don't worry, I'm not wearing any more makeup. And then the night before, I'm like, I'm just going to buy some new makeup. Maybe it's because my old makeup was, maybe that's what causes it get infected. So I'll get some new makeup. Which, if you are not experienced in buying makeup, and you go into the CVS and try to figure out what you're supposed to buy, it's insane. there's like, you know, 9 different brands that have all the 7, each one has 7 versions of foundation. And so I'm like, oh wait, do I need 8-hour coverage? Do I want smooth blending? Do I want, I'm like, and then you pick which kind you want, and then you got to pick the tint. And it's like, and I'm holding them up to my face. I'm like, well, okay, this is under my eye, so it's a little bit lighter. It's like, I guess this is why people go to the counters at Nordstrom's and stuff, because I was like a fish out of water, or it was like I was illiterate and having to like read street signs, like, what's going on? So I brought some makeup just in case. And in on the flight there, I was on the same flight with my cousin and her family, and who they were going up for an event. And so I ran into him in the plane, and then after the plane on the shuttle in the airport. And my cousin's like, "What happened to your eye?" And I was like, ugh. Like, I was kind of hoping that it wasn't that noticeable. So to have like the first person that I had a conversation with on this trip ask what's wrong with my face was like, ah. So I wore the makeup for the show. And I think, I don't know if this is me just like my mind playing tricks on me, but I think, as you noticed, that it is not that I may have backstepped my healing a little bit by not honoring the healing process and by putting makeup on. So my vanity is at odds with my immune system and my beautiful healing body. Yes, so that's what's going on with my eye. Looks like I'm not alone in having anxiety and stress in the makeup aisle. Woo. And just, you know, let me just touch on just in general about makeup. You know, I struggle with this because I'm attracted to a made-up woman's face. I like the look, you know, not exclusively, but like if a woman is made up, like I'm like, oh, that, she looks pretty. And especially some, like, sometimes I'll even say like, wow, your eyes look great. And so I struggle because I appreciate and I like and I'm attracted to a woman in makeup. But on a intellectual, spiritual level, I feel so bad for the cultural pressures on a woman and the expectation to always be in makeup and the incredible burden of time and anxiety and, you know, like, you know, I've talked to people that, you know, knew someone that did permanent makeup, and there were people, the women that I talked to who said, I never let anyone see me until I put my makeup on. In fact, if I go camping, I will do my makeup before I exit the tent. And what a crappy thing to have our culture be kind of making the norm. It seems so insane. And especially, I mean, I don't know if this is just what I've seen, but it seems like the base level makeup is way more intense and more, you know, runway like than it used to be. And so like the pressure to really, you know the ins and outs of makeup has gone crazy. Partially, I think, because of the internet and the number of YouTube videos and such. I mean, you know, some of the most popular channels on YouTube are makeup artists and makeup tips, which is my segue to my new show I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be doing makeup tips on how to cover a Chalizion scar underneath your eye. And I hope with your help that I can be one of the most popular shows on YouTube. I'm kidding. After months and months of oppositional conversations, I think the only, like, right now objective is to try to understand. That's it, period. Not try to understand so that we can find common ground, so that we can have a dialogue. No, let's just forget that. Now, step one, just understand. Just figure out what are the fears, or what are the goals? What are the, you know, is it the fear of radical Islam? And in the face of that, there's all sorts of decisions that we'd be willing to do to protect our families. Okay, all right. Period. I understand. Then, moving on. All right. Because the instinct, I think, is even in an attempt to communicate, there is the intention of changing your view. And you listen differently. One of the things that I got most excited about was the Sidewalk Talk, I think that's what it's called, which is a group that is growing that does what Grandpa Caleb used to do. He used to do a listening post where he would sit down in his retirement village, put up a sign saying listening post, and just sit there. And people could sit down and talk and tell their stories, and he would just listen. Not counseling, not chatting, just listening. And so there's this new organization that is growing and doing it, there was a talk from the woman who started it. It was just so, she's talking about how profound, not just for the people that get to be heard, but when you actually listen. And I talked to another woman who was a practitioner, and she was just saying that it's this radically different pattern for a lot of people, because even when you are being, you know, a good listener, what that often entails is, you know, noticing the things that you're saying so that I can reflect back and make sure that you know that I heard you, or share a similar story so that, you know, that we get this resonance with what we're talking about. But that's absolutely different than simply listening. And so I'm supposed to get in touch with a person and figure out if there's already a San Diego chapter of this, or look into starting the San Diego chapter and either integrating it with for Saturdays, or maybe doing it just as a separate event. So I think it's a cool idea. Looking forward to it. Stay in touch if that's something that's interested to you, and I will make sure I share the links and contact info. Last week I had an experience. My friend Cree Brown, my hairstylist, my hair artist, she gave me an awesome gift. She treated me to a treatment, a three-part treatment at the Longevity Lounge in San Diego. So Longevity Lounge is a spa, and I hear people talk about going to spas, and, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with that. I've only had a few professional massages, although very recently I have started to have a regimen of routine massages, because I've started to finally kind of turn the corner on my perspective of, it's not just decadence, like, oh, that feels good, but actually, like, I feel like my body has less aches and my functions better when I have a deep therapeutic massage on a routine basis. But anyways, so I went to the spa and had three things that I'd never done before, three virgin experiences. A lymphatic massage, I think that's what they called it, where the lymphatic system is the second circulatory system in your body, but there's no heart to pump. So the intention of the massage is to move around and stimulate your lymph nodes. I'm not really that good at anatomy. But it was very cool, and they used all these cool, like, wands that did things, and little tiny little cups that did suction. Not like those big cups that leave people with massive hickeys, but so did that, which was very cool. And then did an infrared sauna, which when she showed it to me, she said, I'm going to set it for an hour. I usually can't go more than 45 minutes. And so I get in, it's 150 degrees. And she also said, okay, it's not like a traditional sauna, with the steam, it heats more from the inside. And based on the way she explained it, I thought it would be, you know, less traumatic or less extreme than a traditional massage, but that was not the case. It was flipping hot. And I was like sweating like crazy and just like soaking this washcloth just dripping off me. And after 30 minutes, I was like, my pride was like, I gotta last 45 minutes if that's what she does. But at 30 minutes, I was like, I don't know. And I made it to 40, and then I pulled the ripcord. And then just could not cool off. You ever had that feeling where like you towel off and then you sweat drip, drip, drip. And then you like towel that off and then you keep sweating, even though you're, you know, not in the heat anymore. And then the finale was my hydrothermy. What? My colon hydrothermy. Say that again. Oh, my colon hydrotherapy. Now, I don't usually speak about my colon on Hug Nation. I'll say this. In the past, I've rarely discussed my colon on Hug Nation. But you know what? It's a new era, new time. It's a new me. So we're going to talk about my colon. Nah, let's not talk about my colon. But I'll talk about the experience. It was, you know, I walk into the room and I'm... Well, first, before I went into the sauna, that she said, you know, put on this hospital gown, and I'm like, why am I wearing a hospital gown that opens in the back? And then I'm like, oh, right, because after the sauna, I'm going to go get my colon. Yeah, okay. So I'm in a hospital gown, and she's explaining everything, and I'm still sweating, and I'm, but she was so good about making me feel comfortable, and she was so assuring, and so surprising to me, before I knew it, I was, you know, up on this medical table with my knees up. And then when she asked me to, I turned over, like leaned to the side so she could insert the tube, and start filling me with water. And it was funny because I got so chatty. I just started telling stories, started talking. And, well, that's probably enough details, but I'll just say that, I'm glad that I've now had that experience, and I look forward to doing it again, you know? It was a growth experience. The more people that I'm comfortable putting things into my butt, I think the more evolved I am as a man. So I'll probably wish I didn't say that out loud, but... In any case, I'm grateful to the women at Longevity Lounge. They were awesome, and I'm super grateful for the experience. Thanks for being here today on this beautiful Monday. I don't know if it's beautiful where you are. San Diego almost washed away this weekend, and it is like paradise outside right now. Not only that, if you weren't here earlier, I saw whale spouts, two whales out on the horizon. So not only is it paradise, it's like surreal paradise. So hopefully it is paradise where you are. If not, close your eyes and summon the paradise within. You are perfect. You are amazing. So grateful to have this time together. Thanks for letting me recalibrate and share. I am honored. I love you. Whee! You're watching the archive, and that's amazing. Technology is bottled up. This experience, this now moment, time traveled it to your now moment. It's now our now moment, regardless of where we are in time and space.